Listening to KSUA Radio 91.5 FM Fairbanks. Back in the studio, not Saturday 1 to 2 p.m. actually. Speaking of Anthropology, is actually Friday from 11 to noon, and we're going to get that fixed, but here we are. The promo plays as usual, and both Kevin and Dylan are back in the studio. Of course, Dylan is physically, spiritually here in the studio, but not physically in the studio. Dylan, welcome. Welcome back.
A while in a couple different senses. Yeah, as you said, we're back to 11 to noon because we are bad at branding and we can't help ourselves from bouncing between two different show times, but that's student radio for you. I mean, they're all more professional than I am. I shouldn't say that. They're all better at it than I am. But I am in another place. So when we last spoke was for the week that I was in Fairbanks, right? Prior to then, I had been, we had been doing this from Fairbanks in Southern Washington. And now I find myself in New York City. So yeah, it's, we've traveled both quite a bit in space and time, really, mostly time for space for me, and time for both of us. But yeah, I'm in the Bronx right now for my grad program. So it's a new locale, new shebang, new recording setup too. So hopefully there's not too much street noise, but we'll see how that goes.
You know, if some, sirens or a busy New Yorker walks by and starts yelling, we'll know why and we'll know where you are. So mm-hmm. At least this is not to go directly off on a tangent as we usually do, but you know, what would the Fairbanks sound be then? An example, right? You're sitting around, I mean, maybe a snowball hitting your window, right?
Mm-hmm. It depends, right? Because like on campus in the Woods Center, you can definitely have like the chatter of students. You know, I think anybody who spent, a good amount of time in the Woods Center knows, can tell just based on noise alone, right? When the different like mealtime peaks are, right? You know, because there's a lot more people in there, you know, like one or six, you know, than there is at like 4:30 or whatever, right? So on campus, I think, you know, it's going to be a little different. Whereas like at my house growing up in Fairbanks, a lot of the background noise in summertime was the small planes because we were next to a small runway, right? So these single engine, mostly prop planes. And so you'd hear their buzz quite regularly, right? So it all just kind of, you know, there's not one sort of Fairbanks noise, right? It all depends on where you're at, whether you're on campus or, you know, you're hanging out somewhere else. Yeah. I don't know. What's your experience been so far, Kevin, with, background noises, you know, especially with you having also moved around a little bit within Fairbanks now, you know, you're not just staying in one place on campus, right? So what's your experience been with that?
Yeah, no, times change. Maybe we can then allude to, for me, it's the California to Alaska experience of a Californian, like, background noise would be, quintessentially what would be experienced when the sun is shining, right? It's 50 degrees every day. to kind of like put California into a typecast, but like, you know, you hear tech guys walking around talking about what is going on. You hear, the birds chirping and everything. It's paradise, right? Maybe Fairbanks has been, Maybe my highlights, I think, have been, you know, when a friend or a tourist comes to town and sees the aurora at night and you're just walking home trying to stay in the warm and enjoy your evening. And then you see or hear these massive buses go by, and it's just filled with tourists. And they're looking out the window. Maybe that has been really memorable. Maybe other experiences like, you know, at the sledding hill on campus, right? Seeing, you know, little kids just go all in and go all the way down the hill. And then you see these older college students like fearfully waiting at the top, trying to figure out what they want to do. And the chatter and the experience, I think very much so winter activities are what kind of dictate that soundscape. That's been really interesting to me. Anyways, I appreciate you going off on this tangent with me. Even though it's because we're just starting our conversations as we usually do about what is anthropology and what the show is. Speaking of anthropology is a radio show here for our listeners, maybe for new listeners, old listeners, a little short introduction. Bear with me, Dylan, here. We are a Goldies Award-winning show here at KCUA 91.5 FM Fairbanks. We took a bit of a hiatus, primarily because I think both Dylan and I were kind of in this transitional phase, and we soon will be again, not too long from now again, and trying to figure out things. But it's definitely been a big summer for both of us, kind of figuring out what we were going to do. I graduated from university here in Fairbanks, and Dylan will move to New York and is starting his graduate school program. Busy with that as well, and we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to talk a little bit about, of course, my fellowship experience currently, and we'll share some thoughts on what it is to be a post-grad. So this is the post-grad show. You know, I think Dylan and I have talked about this, but we have always thought about bringing on graduate students or our colleagues who are now graduate students, and so we are so close to that. You know, once I apply for grad school and once I potentially get in, then we can have a grad student show. But as of now, we're going to have Dylan talk about grad school, and I'll talk a little bit about what it means to be an anthropologist post-grad working and what that experience is. But this is Speaking of Anthropology on KSUA, and we're glad to be back. Dylan, remind me, when was the last time we had a show? Would it be... It's got to be last year. Earlier this year.
No. Kevin, do you know what year it is? It was the end of July, because I was up from the 19th to the 26th. So that would have been about the 23rd or the 24th of July. Yeah. Because after that, about, you know, I had my brief trip back home, and then I had to move about a month after, and at the same time you were also moving across town, basically. So it was really hectic there for a while.
Bear with me there, Dylan, a second. The whole summer flashed by and felt like a whole year, you know. I think even more so because of, you know, what is happening currently in the world with COVID pandemic. Everything is just blurred into one mishmash of what's going on. The days and the months pass by so fluidly. Now it's fall and it's nearly snowing. So So I think, Dylan, maybe so you had given me a song suggestion earlier, and I was wondering why you chose that song. If you don't mind telling us a little bit about it, maybe is that a song that's been very quintessential to your New York endeavors, or just a song that you like, and we'll get it started on that on a Friday afternoon here in Fairbanks, Alaska, for all our listeners and around the world.
So I chose Les Oiseaux dans les Chamiers, which is from pardon my French, je ne parle non français, but it's from the Tales of Hoffman, and I picked it. It does actually have a connection to grad school, because it's from this particular song is a brief musical adaptation of a portion of E.T.A. Hoffman's Sandman, and that is a piece that people who have read Freud, especially on the uncanny, know he references and discusses quite a bit. And of course, in turn, the uncanny and Freud, Freud's essay on the uncanny, is something that does come up, at least in my experience so far, in a couple different classes in my grad school program, and it is something that is referenced and thought about in the social sciences. You know, however much stock you end up ultimately putting in it, it is an influential text in the social sciences. And so I figured, you know, I would in a way present a sort of musical version derived in the same way that Freud's work is derived from Hoffman, a musical piece derived from Hoffman, for our return show, speaking of anthropology, here on KSUA 91.5 FM Fairbanks.
You're listening to KSUA Radio 91.5 FM Fairbanks. That was Maggie Rogers, Alaska. Dylan has questions for me, I'm sure, and I have questions for Dylan. While we were playing the, and I'm not gonna say the song name right. I'm gonna let Dylan say it. The song name is.
Les Oisson. Les Oisons de la Chamier?
Yeah.
Something like that.
So by
I don't speak French. It's where Olympia the automaton is singing at this party. And so they have to keep her creator has to keep winding her up. And so that's why her voice will fade and then you crank, 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 and she'll come back up and be singing and singing and singing loudly, and then it'll fall. And so, yeah, it's just a very interesting piece musically as well.
Comes and goes. It was a radio DJ's, I'm not saying nightmare, but slightly, because you'd hear the volume go down and you think, oh, time to come back. But no, it's just part of the song.
Sorry, I should have given you a warning beforehand. But what about your selection,
yeah,
right? So why did you pick that one, since I already stated my reasons before the break? What are your reasons, Kevin?
Simple as this, Dylan. Two things. First of all, Maggie Rogers did her schooling in New York. that's the first thing that I thought of. Second thing, so I'm in this fellowship program currently here called the Alaska Fellows Program here at the university, and there's a new cohort here that's British here in Fairbanks. So there's a total of six of us, and I think for the first time, or no, not for the first time, for the second time here living in Alaska, I'm experiencing Alaska re-Alaska again. And so listening to the song and hearing the song like 5 years ago when I had first arrived, 2017, and now hearing the song again, because it's their literally favorite song. We have a playlist, and they literally have that as the first song. We listen to it all the time. I love it. I won't lie. Talking about what Maggie Rogers' experience here in Alaska was, and now living this experience again with all of these fellows, in terms of, you know, seeing the aurora, you know, experiencing first snow. You know, winter is coming. You know, that fear, and I'm sure you know all about it, Dylan. Right. You know, the difference between snow machining, snowmobiling, right? These are small things that I think Alaskans take for granted now, maybe, or we have a pride towards. But it's, it's kind of refreshing to see it all anew again. Quick side note, actually, and shout out to them. They actually have a show as well, Dylan. You probably haven't heard about this, but it's Ty and Taylor. So Ty Food and Taylor Swift, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Here on KSUA. So if you're interested in that, check out their show. They just talk about that two topics, but they go in depth and then they go and experience it. And I'm really glad that they were able to come and join the radio station. So a talk show about Thai food and Taylor Swift. That's my quick promo PSA for them, at least. Maybe we can ask you, Dylan, a little bit about that too later on. But because that's another question about Fairbanks. Thai food is everywhere. Like, but yeah, anyways, let's get back to anthropology and the bigger topic today. Yeah, Dylan, so now you've started grad school, right? And, you know, on the show, we've spoken to many faculty. We've spoken to students from different levels in anthropology. Could you tell us a little bit maybe about what that experience has been like? Maybe we'll start with the move because, you know, the change from Alaska to New York, settling into a new city, and understanding the culture of the people, which distinctly we know what New Yorkers are like. And maybe you can give us the characteristic traits that you've confirmed.
You think you do. Yeah, no. Well, okay. So what I'll say is even before the move, right? So I, you know, did one semester of my master's program online last fall of 2020, like a lot of people did. And then I said, you know, I enjoyed it academically. I did not enjoy a lot of the other stuff. I did not enjoy being at a distance with the time zone changes, doing it all over Zoom and not really feeling connected with anybody. And so I took spring off. And so I am in the funny position of being a first year, second semester graduate student in fall of 2021. But you know, that's as it goes. I'm not the only person in that boat, which helps. But yeah, the move itself has been quite something because I'd never been to New York before. I've been to the East Coast a couple of times. The farthest north I'd been was DC, but New York is a lot bigger than DC. You know, DC is great, but you know, it's not quite even as densely populated as New York. So yeah, one of the first things that I noticed, you know, and what I'll say is that there isn't, they might all be New Yorkers, but there's not one New Yorker. It's not a prototypical New Yorker, right? You know, it's such a diverse city, right? So for example, I've, you know, there's a lot of folks from a lot of different backgrounds who all fall under like a broader Spanish speaking community, whether they are or their, you know, their families are originally from Central America or Dominica or, you know, somewhere, a broad range of people, but you know, all fall under this one category of Spanish speaking, but in and of themselves, those are quite diverse communities in their own right. And then you have, you know, for example, in my immediate area, there are Dominicans and Spanish speakers, but then there are also, you know, there's an Albanian community, there's a Bangladeshi community, right? And so these are all New Yorkers, but they are not, I think it would be very difficult to try and subsume them into one kind of stereotype of a New Yorker, right? So yeah, that sort of the absolute utter diversity of the city, right? I mean, I think there's claims that like there are more languages spoken in New York than like in any other city in the world, right? Just because of the, you know, people coming from all over. So linguistically and culturally very diverse. So that was one that, you know, one of the first things I noticed. But then related to that is just like how, you know, you can be walking through these various neighborhoods and there are definite communities. So like, you know, Washington Heights or whatever is like a very strong Spanish speaking community, but then you can traverse the whole thing and end up, you know, in a completely different community. And it can take you, you know, like half an hour walk, right, to be going through, to feel in a way like you're cutting across the whole world, right? And you know, meeting people from you know, various different cultural and ethnic backgrounds and of, you know, all kinds of beliefs and faiths and customs and all these sorts of things, and just, you know, within less than a mile of each other, right? Because like especially Manhattan, but even the broader city, right, is like, it's big, but it's mostly really dense, right? Manhattan is obviously the densest, but like, you know, that's it's all one city, right? And so within like, you know, the 7, 8, 10 mile stretches, the, you know, how radically different each neighborhood, the communities can be from each other and all within that geographic area is something that I find absolutely fascinating and really enjoyable, you know. And it is just a fun city to get to just kind of wander around. I did that a lot when I first got here. I haven't had as much time now that I'm in my master's program, but it's definitely an interesting city just to get to explore that way, right? And to see, you know, all the different things that are going on, right? And all the different people and all the different things they're doing. So yeah, and the New York aspect of it, I've been enjoying quite a bit, and I've been learning a lot. Although I will say one thing, I haven't been, it's been 2 years since I've been to Berlin, but I'm of the opinion now that basically all subway systems smell the same, because I swear to God, the New York subway system smells the same as the Berlin U-Bahn system. Now, maybe I'm wrong because I don't have a great nose, but that is one thing that apparently seems to be a common thing in general, a shared thing, is subway systems might all just smell the same, you know, so just throw that one out there. But yeah, I don't know. You do have your own New York experiences, right, Kevin, even if they're smaller. But I mean, that kind of like my Heidelberg experience was 2 days compared to your, you know, 6 months, right? 7 months.
Sehr, sehr ein bisschen, yeah?
Yeah.
Very small. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I no, just listening to you talk about New York is really refreshing and nice, because it's like I'm there again. And for those who have been to New York, right, the block to block, you know, high rise building, you know, packed streets, which I think still are very much so, right, Dylan? Packed streets and people getting places, getting things done, going somewhere to enjoy their day. It's quite interesting, I think, to hear you talk about, you know, that experience, because I think a lot about you know, people who go to a new city and the things that they see and the things that they experience, right? You know, the niche, the small things matter the most, interestingly enough. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. You know, some of my fellow roommates here, you know, who've just arrived, they see things that I just take for granted now, right? You know, the leaves that fall to the ground and fall, like the color of the leaves and then the patterns of the leaves. That's something I've definitely looked into, I think probably when I was here for the first time. You know, enjoying the scenery with first snow, right? These are small things. But and most importantly, what is distinctly Alaskan is friendliness and open-mindedness and willing to have a conversation and helping people out, because, you know, this is a place where you need to help each other out, right? These small things that I've taken for granted, because I think it's just part of everyday life now. I don't know what that has like been for you in New York, because, you know, you're the Alaskan, gone to the PNW, gone to Berlin, now going to New York, right? All of those experiences, you know, how are you, maybe let me, this might be a tough one. How are you representing Alaska, Dylan, in New York?
How am I representing Alaska? Well, first of all, I won't shut up about it. That's how I'm representing it. No, I mean, it is, yeah, the small things I completely feel. For example, something that one of the things I noticed was like how a lot of folks for grocery shopping, or really commonly with laundry, have these just like little collapsible metal carts that they just push around, and it holds like, you know, laundry hamper or like two or three bags, you know, of groceries or something. But just these, like, not literally everyone, but very, very common and ubiquitous, right, for people to have them. And like this, like I was like, I've never seen this before. Where are they, like, you just order them on Amazon, like, you know, because especially, you know, because coming from places that were in Fairbanks and in, you know, Pacific Northwest, places where it was mostly, these were driving cities, right? So you drive to the grocery store, you buy your groceries, you put it in your vehicle, you put it in your rig, right? And then you drive back to your house or wherever, right? And so, but that's not really like as much of a thing for a lot of people here, right? Like, even if, you know, you have a car, when the grocery store is like, you know, a 3 minute walk, it'll take you longer to drive there and try and find street parking than it would be to just walk and to buy groceries. And so then, you know, the carts make sense, but, you know, that sort of stuff, or just like, again, the related to that, like how close everything is. So there's like two bodegas, you know, like home bodegas. We'd think of them as like little corner shops, but they're not bodegas. They have cats, all that stereotypical stuff, which apparently is in some ways true, you know, but it's like a minute walk, right? And so you can go there and you can like, you know, get him, have him make you a sandwich and buy hand soap and Oreos all in the same like tiny place, smaller than like a convenience store, right? And so, you know, that is that's also weird, you know, to me. That's new to me, but something that I enjoy. But you know, just these sorts of like what shops are available, how do you access them, how do you interface with those kinds of businesses, with stuff, right? You know, mostly by walking to them, you know, by going more frequently, right? Like I just go, you know, buy groceries and stuff like every couple of days, right? Because it's like I'm not gonna, you know, it's like a 20 minute total trip, right? So I'm not gonna like buy 2 weeks worth and then store God knows where because I have roommates, right? Like, you know, you're interfacing with these sorts of things in a different way than I have in the past, right? That's been my experience so far, is interacting with these things. And so, you know, those sorts of behavioral changes and stuff. And then, yeah, a lot of stuff like that, you know. Of course, there's also things like the cost of goods or whatever, adjusting to some of that, you know, because of God, especially in like Manhattan, right? Where, you know, a lot of things are, you know, pricier there. Manhattan foodstuffs, not the cheapest place in the world, as I'm sure you know, right?
It's not the local co-op here in Fairbanks. It's not the farmer's market.
No. I don't even know.
It's not Fred Meyer's.
No, well, yeah, and like even the grocery stores are like small compared to like a supermarket, like what we know. And they'll call themselves sometimes supermarkets. So, like, I know there at least was a farmer's market somewhere around the greater New York area, that because I knew there's some folks who've gone to it, but like where that is, you know, or what even would be available, I've yet to determine. And that might be like a next summer, next spring, next fall kind of thing, you know, to see what is available there. And I will say too, just as a quick note on the topic of fall, fall's a season here. That's weird. I grew up, as a lot of Alaskans can all attest, fall happens very quickly, right? It's like 2 weeks, maybe three. Like fall happens very quickly, and then sometimes the snow takes longer to get there, right? And then you're left with that weird kind of barren wasteland of no leaves on the trees, which probably is what Fairbanks looks like right now.
Very close, very close. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But like the first leaves, very few, but the first ones started turning in mid-September. And only now have they really started to fall en masse, and they're probably still going to be falling by the end of the month, by Halloween, right? So this is like a proper season that just happens. And so that's also just kind of, you know, that's a different thing, right? Compared to what I grew up with in Fairbanks, right? So, you know, with a lot of cultural things, a lot of environmental things are very, very different, but I'm really enjoying it, you know, and enjoying getting to observe those kinds of differences, you know, so it's been nice. But you, Kevin, you're not, you know, I'm not the only one with some changes in my life. As you've said a little bit, you have the fellowship, right? And so would you mind talking a little more about that and what that's been looking like for you? And what is a fellowship? Like, what does that mean?
Oh, man, that's a tough question, Dylan. I think maybe some of my fellows are listening now, but they might have some better answers, but I'll try my best, Dylan, to find it. But, you know, I think of a fellowship and as similar to an internship as possible. When you think of an internship, right, you're spending time with a company, an institution, a program, and you're working with them and trying to help promote their program, define their program, elevate their program to another standard, right? And that's kind of what we're doing here. Alaska Fellows Program is a unique program because you're bringing together folks from all around the United States with their, you know, degrees already done, maybe a few years out of college or, you know, just out of college, experiencing what Alaska is. That's the number one thing. And then secondly is giving back into the community. So a lot of the things that I'm working on, for example, I work with Alaska Center ICE, and a lot of the work that we're focused on is getting folks to recognize the capacity that they have as entrepreneurs, innovators, and being able to solve issues in Alaska that are really, really important. So I think it's really interesting. Both of us coming from the anthropology department, we're in two very distinctly similar fields, still doing anthropological work. But a lot of the work that I do now, it relates to this community directly. It relates to the things that are happening here, promoting entrepreneurship and ideas, right? Getting students to step up to the plate and think about what are the issues that we're facing and how can we solve them? How can we pitch an idea and then maybe get funded for it to start a company or to start a big project, right? It's kind of been interesting, you know, being an anthropologist slash political scientist, but more anthropologist, and going into this position as a fellow, a lot of the work that I've been doing entitles me, because I'm an anthropologist and because of my previous training, that working with people, yes, it is very much a sociological, psychological thing, but it is also building friendships, building a network, and seeing the potential in others, I think, is not easy sometimes. I think we spend a lot of our time thinking about ourselves, as selfish human beings as we are, and survival and all that. But to think about what the potential of others is, and to kind of mentor and guide them through, an example, we have an I-Corps program. So getting folks to start from scratch, like, Dylan, you and I, we had an idea of creating a radio show, right? And then we pitched the idea to the radio station, and here we are. Now we have a radio show, award-winning, of course, and 50 plus shows, right? And then how do we then scale this up? Right, there's always ways to scale it up and then make it a really big and impactful thing. Some of the projects that are coming through Center ICE have been really, really cool. For those that are interested, definitely reach out. I'm always looking to help people out in that sense. But of course, I'm monologuing again, Dylan. But what's really been interesting about this sort of work is. This is where we can have a really interesting dialogue, but to go from university, right, filled with lots of reading assignments and what you're doing now, and a lot of writing assignments and a lot of, discussions and academic settings, to where I still am in an academic setting, but I'm focused primarily on engaging with others and working with them. And that collaborative spirit of work, setting up meetings, ensuring things go through, hosting webinars. An example, we're having Women Entrepreneurship Week next week here on campus, and we're going to have two webinars talking to successful women entrepreneurs, which is really cool. But I've never thought, being an anthropologist, that I get a chance to interact with these people. So that's kind of, maybe this is where I now go off on a tangent again, Dylan, and ask you a little bit about my thoughts on this. But there's oftentimes, like, this work ethic of, as an anthropologist, that we have to respect, and we have to go through proper channels to talk to somebody, right? To conduct an interview. We have to be ethical, right? I find myself sometimes realizing that being an anthropologist, you may not directly have an in to a community or into a discussion, but maybe connecting the dots with somebody else, forming a relationship, and creating that bond through countless of years and hours of discussion. That was more of a comment. It's just a reflection on what an anthropologist does. But do you have any questions for me about the fellowship? Because I just rambled on there about what I've been doing, and it's very impactful. I like my work, I won't lie. But sometimes it's hard to scale. It's very hard to scale.
Oh yeah, I'm curious. You talked, I think we just touched on a little bit about, like, the sort of networking aspect of it, right? And so I'm curious, like, what all you think from your anthropological degree, right, has been, you know, in this stuff that we learned together in our various anthro classes has been the most directly applicable to the fellowship, besides, you know, this sort of general ability to talk with people and network, which I think, knowing you, I think you were pretty good at that even before you got into the anthro program, right? You know, so how are you, how have you been able to apply that? And also, what has it maybe been teaching you or allowing you to reflect on for your anthro stuff? So basically, like, going into it with something that you'd already learned, but applying it in a new way or a perspective that you're now looking back on something you already knew from anthropology, but in a new light, in a new way, something that is stretched or you already knew in some kind of new capacity. So I guess kind of two questions for you that I'm curious about. But
yeah, no, great questions. I think this is something that you can also tag in on too, because I think this maybe applies to kind of our previous research projects. A lot of, I think, people who involve themselves in entrepreneurship and innovation spend a great deal of time trying to formulate interesting ideas and then pitching them, right? And making sure they are well-rounded and they tackle issues. And of course that they're not already been patented or this, or, you know, have IPs that are already intellectual properties that are already affirmed. But, you know, a lot of the folks that I tend to meet and have conversations with, students maybe here at the university, they'll come to me with, hey, I have this issue I want to solve. And then I instinctively respond in a very anthropological way, saying, well, you know, so if you can scale this project, if you can do this, and then like a survey, like as if we were doing our surveying again, you know, what are the issues that you're addressing? How much can you get done? And then most importantly, why does it matter, right? I know these sound like very blanketed statements, but these are things that we asked in our surveys, right? And then, of course, talking to them about their background and their interests. So maybe let me pull it back a little bit. But from an anthropological perspective, like surveying and interviewing, those are very tangible skills that people use every day. Maybe I think most importantly also, thinking from an anthropological lens and saying, okay, well, maybe an engineer will look at a problem and trying to find a solution, right? From an anthropological perspective, we're going to take multiple avenues. We're going to think about, you know, the people involved, right? The place that is involved with, and then maybe likewise, the materials and issues that are relating to it. And then kind of then look at it holistically, not directly trying to attempt to solve it or resolve it, but look at it in that sense. That's a good question. I think there's a lot more work that I need to work on in terms of what you know, entrepreneurship is, design thinking, example, a whole nother avenue of you know, entrepreneurship. And then, you know, how do you ensure everyone's voice is heard when a project is getting done, right? And stuff like that. But most importantly, I find it that anthropology provides an interesting lens that isn't just, you know, it's 1 + 1 = 2, right? A very mathematical structured format. You know, I'm very open-ended discussions about what it means, what value does it have, ensuring that, you know, the proper community members are involved, right? That very may well include political issues of, you know, who and how much money is going to be allocated, right? And then most importantly, following through with the project, right? You want to make sure things actually happen. It's I give you a long-winded answer again there, Dylan, but I think, you know, that does kind of bring it all together. So I'm kind of curious though to what your thoughts are on that, because and I'm sure you've kind of experienced some of that, but and what that actually means.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about, right, just trying to you know, think things through as with the lens. We've talked a lot about on the show. I checked a couple minutes ago, this is episode 54, right? So, you know, we've talked a lot about like the idea of the anthropological lens, right? And I think it's all, you know, just trying to apply that. And as you said, like, You know, drawing from our own experiences, right, of like preliminary work and then expanding that out. And so finding the good basis to start from, something that'll give you, you know, a empirical basis, a good basis for generating data or something, you know, to see what, you know, a potential problem is or something, you know, and then with the solution that you have in mind, maybe that could be offered for it for a lot of these entrepreneurs, right? Because that does seem to be the way that that sort of stuff works, is it's a lot of people who have ideas and solutions for things, not, you know, whether or not, you know, actually solutions, I guess, is kind of one of the big questions, but, you know, trying to think with them through these things and apply that sort of anthropological lens, right, of just, you know, working things out, having an open mind to various ways that people do things and ways of being that there are in the world, and, you know, just generally try and understand those ways of being in some kind of scientific fashion, but giving weight to qualitative stuff as well as quantitative stuff, right? Without, of course, in your case, getting necessarily too lost in like the theoretical stuff of like, what does it really mean to be an entrepreneur, right? Which could be an interesting thing to think through, but I don't know that that would necessarily be what the kind of stuff that you're, the people who you know you're working with would need, is to spend, you know, like a 12 or 16 weeks of just sitting there thinking, what does it really mean to be an entrepreneur, you know? And then like, we're doing like a Foucauldian like genealogy, right, of like you know, where does that word come from, how was it initially applied and used, into how it's changed over time, you know? As interesting as all that stuff might be, you know, that might be a little more for the academy, right? But that's the wonderful thing about anthropology, is it allows this sort of breadth of different approaches, you know, where you can just be as the, you know, the people advising Xerox on how to make their copiers more user intuitive, or you can, you know, be the people who are, you know, studying what it means at a very fundamental level to be a user in general, right? And this is just this quite fascinating plethora, I think. You know, I mean, we're biased, right? That's why, you know, we're anthropologists. That's why we have a show called Speaking Anthropology. But I think a lot of folks who are listening might also be slightly biased then, because they're tuning into a show called Speaking of Anthropology, so they might also, you know, have some of these thoughts as well about the general breadth and applicability of the wonderful field to those sorts of diverse activities.
Yeah. Sorry, just to cut in here real quick. You almost got me thinking also about maybe in my next, like, you know, fellowship staff meetings, discussing a little bit about what, you know, we do. So it's a mix of things that I'm working on. So Startup Weekend here in Fairbanks, or sorry, statewide Alaska, along with Startup Week. So these are like big entrepreneurship gatherings of people virtually. And then so thinking about that and not dwelling on an idea gets me to wonder how we can apply linguistic anthropology briefly, giving a quick phonology of what entrepreneurship is to inspire people, right? And then pushing forth maybe the cultural anthropology side of, you know, let's integrate our thoughts with the community members and getting people involved. You know, how do you create a company with a team members that come from different backgrounds and have different interests, and which we know all of about, right? And then, you know, then actually scaling it up to that. But anyways, you got me thinking already, and I'm excited to consider, but also try not to get lost within the layer upon layer.
Well, it can be fun to get lost in it sometimes, but it definitely is context dependent, as anthropologists love, you know, contextually dependent things. You know, and sometimes you know, there's a time to, you know, start really thinking through those sorts of complex things layer by layer. And then sometimes, you know, you're dealing with more concrete, you know, practical questions and, you know, trying to implement things. And also, of course, it all depends on time, right? Like, you know, you're in this fellowship where you are doing, you know, as you've said, you have these weekly, you're an event's coming up for a week, or, you know, these webinars or whatever, right? And so this is a different sort of rhythm, right, than a longer term research project or even a semester spent diving into one topic, right? Those all have, you know, their own different time constraints and their own different rhythms. And so how the that's going to in part guide how you, or dictate maybe less favorably, how you can, you know, approach each of the problems that those situations are going to be presenting, right? So yeah, you know, time management on a webinar is a little different than time management for a 16-week semester, right?
Totally agree. Can't agree more. Dylan, it's been a pleasure talking to you again on Speaking of Anthropology here on KSUA 91.5 FM Fairbanks. Yeah, we're going to continue to bring our show to you live as much as possible as we can. It may be pre-recorded. We are on two different time zones. So to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in, but bear with us. Any notes for our listeners, Dylan, since we have you here?
Just that I'm really excited to be back. I know you're really excited to be back, and we look forward to continuing to do this, hopefully on a weekly basis, you know, from here on to whenever something else big happens.
To infinity and beyond. Quick PSA here on KSUA 91.5 FM Fairbanks. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living is hosting several giveaways and free events. Join us in the Sadler's Home Furnishing parking lot on Thursday, October 21st, for a drive-in film screening. The film will be The Feminist on Cell Block Y. It is a documentary that follows a prison rehabilitation program challenging incarcerated men to rethink what it means to be a man. Staff will be giveaway bags at the parking lot, so tons of opportunities for that. Again, that event is on October 21st at the Sadler's Home Furnishing parking lot for a film. Participants will also have the opportunity to fill out cards and questions regarding event regarding to the show Upstream here on KSUA 91.5 that will be taking place. So thanks for that PSA. Thanks so much. Speaking of anthropology, we'll bring you more shows weekly. We're going to find some new guests and bring you live shows about what's going on in the anthropology world. We're trying our best. Dylan and I are finding ways to kind of, you know, shake the rust off, because it's been a few months.
Yep.
Lo and behold, here we are. So let's get moving and let's get cracking. Dylan, thank you so much again for joining me today. What is the show and what are we doing?
This has been Speaking of Anthropology, and we've been speaking about anthropology and some other things.